Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I hope he doesn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water, man.
Welcome into 11 Personnel. Nick Roush and Adam Luckett talking to you after a not so exciting week for the Kentucky football program. Luckett, it was it's hard to win a football game when you turn it over four times on the road.
Yeah, in nine possessions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going back on this game, I think like all these things can be true. Number one, it was a bad matchup for Kentucky. What Mississippi State does on offense is kind of what Kentucky dares teams to do. And they defensively, Mississippi State, they want to win the efficiency battle on both sides of the ball. So they are not going to let you run the football. You're going to have to get explosive plays off them. And that's not something Kentucky's doing really well right now. It's creating explosives. So you add that up with that. It was a huge game for Mississippi State. Homecoming, brought the baseball team back. Hosting a ranked team. If you don't win this game, if you're Mississippi State, your season really can go in a tailspin. So Kentucky kind of walked into a hornet's nest off a bye week, off a program-defining moment, potentially, in the game at Georgia. And then Mississippi State made every play. So, like, in a game where there's going to be plays that are to be made, Kentucky drops pass breakup.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mississippi State turns two pass breakups into interceptions. Havoc rate. Kentucky had a higher defensive havoc rate than Mississippi State, but Mississippi State was able to turn those into turnovers. And then you look at the specific turnovers.
They're bad.
First and 10. You just crossed the 50. First possession of the game. You draw up a shot play. Just a bad throw. Interception. Yeah. Guy makes a really good play on the ball. Juggles it, but still makes the interception. Second turnover. Really kind of aggressive coaching there, I think, by Mark Stoops. You get a big punt, pin them deep. You call timeouts when you hadn't had a lot going for you in that half. You get field position. You go and score. You get an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Quarterback doesn't read cover two right. Isaiah Cummings gets too jammed inside on what's supposed to be what looks like a fade route. A tip ball turns into a diving interception at the goal line, and then you come out a half.
Well, and to that point, like quickly, how many times have we seen Kentucky actually go for that score before half? And right. Then
it doesn't happen a lot.
I mean, they were in scoring position, and you know, you miss Josh Ali open for a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like if you just put it on him, that's a score. And instead of getting seven, you throw an interception the following play, and you even take away the chance to get three and make it a one-point game.
And both of those turnovers are on first downs. So you take away bare minimum four total plays there that your offense would have gotten. Then you come out of the half, defense gets a stop, forces a field goal. Everyone knew that was a big possession. Like you didn't have to score there, but you needed to at least get a couple first downs, play field position. We can get into Chris Rodriguez utilization if we want to, but biggest possession of the game, they go to him twice. He fumbles. Mississippi State gets the ball just outside the red zone, scores a couple plays later. Next possession, you're down 24-10. It's all right. You know, you're absolutely in the danger zone. You got to score this possession. Come out, batted ball, defensive lineman gets an interception.
Boom.
and it Wandell was wide open on the RPO slant or glance route. And so then the game's over at that point. And so not much bounce Kentucky's that way, but it was pretty clear that Mississippi State brought a lot of intensity and fire and want to and readiness to that game. And I don't think Kentucky really ever matched it and really wasted an awesome special teams performance, because if you score a non-defense or if you score a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown, any non-offensive touchdown, you should expect to win a game, especially a game where you should be pretty evenly matched.
Yeah.
That really should be a turning point in the game. And they weren't able to take advantage of it. They weren't able to get important stops on defense. They didn't play complimentary football at all, really. The one time their defense does, the offense goes and turns it over. And also, you could call it an all-systems failure. Shout out Rich Brooks. But
yeah,
it was just a bad night.
But you even had
– playing with how this team has played.
After the turnover barrage, they went down and scored. The defense gets a stop, and then immediately 3-0.
Yeah, but even then, okay, they get the – if we want to talk about the officials don't replay an incomplete touchdown pass.
Yeah, that was
bad. My guy's up there eating nachos. Then right after that, a Mississippi State guy calls a fair catch. They don't whistle. They run the play. Vito Tisdale gets hurt on a kickoff that should have been blown dead from the start.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
I don't
– guys.
To your point, too, we can complain about officiating all week, but like
excuse for the booth. The guys on the field stuff happens. Yeah. But the booth guy's up there and he gets, you know, what, 5-6 replays to review. He's looking at everything. Like, it's clear as day, really, on the both of them, the Georgia one with the spot and this one. Like,
what's the point of having replay?
It's pretty like, what is he like? That's my question. Like, are we even, what's the guy doing? Like, did he go to bathroom break? Is it, you know, he's got to go smoke, get a smoke break in during the game. Like, what are we doing? Is he up there eating nachos? Like, what is going on? Why is this stuff getting reviewed?
To fix the coffee maker.
Yeah. Is a guy in Birmingham, isn't it? Or did they send the guy to the stadium? See, I think he's in Birmingham now.
Well,
maybe I need to go knock on the door, make sure.
Yeah, because I know a replay official pretty well, and I even saw him at a Kentucky game. The one I know. So they send replay officials to games.
See, I thought it went to the control center there in Birmingham.
No, they might have a guy that they can talk to in Birmingham as well. But yeah, there's a replay official on site and who's messing things up now. It's still, even if they get those calls right, 4 turnovers is 4 turnovers. Like, a -4 turnover game, you can't overcome. And even if Yusuf Corker picks off that pass and makes it -3, it's still, you can't leave that many points off the board in a seemingly toss-up game. And look at, I think a lot of this boils down to, very simply, that we had a Will Levis regression game. He played bad. I mean,
it was a Florida game all over.
I know. And I don't know what it is to, but particularly on the deep balls, like we haven't, when was the last deep ball he hit? Truly bomb. LSU. He hit a couple.
He didn't even hit. I mean, the one big one was the rig on the RPO where the guy just was uncovered. And then he hit a 25-yard wheel route. But if you're talking about a dialed up deep shot, like the one where Max Protect hit Robinson, or where you run a post or whatever, he hasn't hit one since Missouri, I don't think.
Yeah.
He didn't hit a true big one. Well, actually, he hit one big one to Robinson against Chattanooga. So, okay. But first 3 weeks, they were producing a lot of them and they've all but disappeared. The way the coverage is working has changed, but he's had shots and he hasn't been able to hit.
And I think some of it, you have to say, teams are taking them away more. So we could see that obviously like at Georgia, but that first throw, he underthrew Robinson.
He's open.
Yeah. I mean, just make the throw, you know, like he's missed some. And I really feel like he's one made throw away from kind of maybe regaining his confidence. But as Stoop said on Monday, this game, it was a lot about, I think Mississippi State showed a bunch of crazy stuff pre-snap. And when the pressure came, instead of relying on his preparation, he went back to getting happy feet. And we got it was, a kind of Terry Wilson, Patrick Toles reincarnated performance down in Starkville.
It definitely looked like Will Levis and Liam Cohen's first time going against that Rocky Long 3-3-5. Gap cancellation defense, slant and stutton, bringing blitzes, dropping D linemen constantly into zone. Because, I mean, that defense, you have to see it first. And then once you see it and you kind of get used to their blitz structure, it's a little bit easier to take advantage of. But, you know, it was just like, it was just bad. Execution was really bad. I don't think they probably should have got maybe, I think if you go back and watch it, you would have wished they maybe would have got Levis out on the perimeter some, run him a little bit. I still think that's something they need to do more often. You know, there's stuff going on with Chris Rodriguez.
Yeah. Which
Stoops won't say it, but I think he's just playing. I think he's playing through a legitimate injury.
Yeah.
At this point, all the signs are there.
My guess, this is my guess, because he referred to it, you know, stuff happens at practice last week. My guess is he took a face mask to the hand and has like a broken knuckle or I don't know, something weird, because you noticed that he threw the gloves on, right?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't putting those gloves on unless he felt like he needed to. He drops a toss sweep. Like, something's going on with his hands. He felt like the way he fell on the fumble that wasn't a fumble was awkward, too. Like,
well, the fumble, like, the last fumble where he bumps into Darren and just drops the ball, the South Carolina fumbles. And if you go back and watch that goal line fumble against Missouri, his left wrist takes – the guy hits it, puts his helmet right on his left wrist, and he drops the ball. And I think he hurt that wrist, and I don't know how severe it is, but I think that's still bothering him. He's got like a pound of tape on both his wrists. And if you look at the other backs, no one else has a pound of tape on the wrist.
Yeah, and they also didn't have McClain to go to. The running game in general –
but he was on special teams. Like, McClain was out there on special, on kick coverage.
So, do we think it's more of a Cohen is hesitant to go to the run game? Because I think a lot of it is being patient with the running game.
Well,
really, that's the big overall problem with the Kentucky offense right now. As bad as Will Levis played, the only alarming thing you can take away from the last 2 weeks is that in the two losses, Kentucky has not ran the ball. Georgia can be an exception, but is this a running backs are injured problem? Is this a the defenses they're playing are very good? Or is just Liam Cohen not being patient enough as a play caller to let the running game to truly try to establish the run?
I think the Georgia game's a one-off. I think Kentucky did come out committed to the run and tried to run the ball. It just wasn't working in the Georgia game. They didn't have the snaps in the Mississippi State game. That gets back to the complimentary football, turning it over on first down, defense not getting quick stops to give you the ball back. And they got in places where it was a pass-first situation. I bet they've had more pass-first snaps than, you know, even snaps in the game, where you're down multiple possessions or in the half where you kind of have to pass
that's it. That's true. There was also, too, a possession where – I believe it was the field goal possession. They run it down to like the 30, and then three incomplete passes later, they're kicking a field goal.
Yeah. There's a reason why no one has ran the ball more than 30 times against Mississippi State this season.
Yeah, that's true. So
they're diving and they're taking it away. They want you, like, that's what they're just, this is what we're stopping, you know? So like that game was never going to be a game where Kentucky was going to run the ball 45 times.
So
even if Chris Rodriguez healthy, like what you wanted in that game for him to get 23, 24 and like get like 120 yards and then see if you can steal some yards with Levis scrambles or another back or like Wandell in the rounds. But you had to win that game. You had to get explosive plays and you were going to have to probably get them in the passing game. So there was really no getting around. Like Will Levis had to play well for them to win that game. There was really no getting around that.
Well,
that didn't happen. And like, you know, the offense shares a lot of blame, but they were over 50% on third down. The defense just didn't give them enough opportunities, but they also put the defense in really bad spots by handing them two turnovers right there that took away 14 points, and then their turnovers they had took away points on the other end.
So, look, it, in answering my question, I think you've reached my kind of conclusion of the game is that I'm not too terribly this game did not reveal a bunch of, like, big-time problems and cracks in the foundation. Like, Kentucky turned it over four times when they in a toss-up game. They needed a quarterback to play well, and he played performed poorly. The defense,
if this was
going to turnovers are an issue.
Right.
There's only so much he can do as a coach, but if bad stuff keeps happening, obviously, like, that's on the guy who makes, you know, $700,000 to fix it.
You're right. But I will say, like, Levis having a bad day is what I chunk up this game to almost as much as anything, because hell, if you take away, I don't like playing that game, but the two short fields they gave him, if that's 14 points off the board, you should be able to outscore a 17 point Mississippi State team. You know, I mean, the defense, they came up with a couple stops. They forced a couple field goals. They booked up big right before half. I mean, it was a 17-10 game. The offense hadn't really done anything, but they still had a chance and things spiraled. So, like, I that's why I'm not.
Yeah, I want to get the defense here in a little bit, but I want to focus on the offense right quick here.
Okay.
This is just number one. Like, when Kentucky lays an egg, they're just not good enough to win against SEC teams yet. When we see them lay eggs, Missouri last year, this game, in like 50-50 games, they're just not you just got to keep recruiting better. Like, you just got to get better players. That's how that gets fixed. So, like, this is going to be a thing. You just got to hope you lay the eggs at the right times in the schedule too. And so that's why it's important to just keep raising that recruiting ceiling. But offensively, like, if Levis doesn't get better these last whatever games. Now, he's still got Vandy, New Mexico State. Louisville's not a good defense, so he's still going to have his, you know, stat build. He's still got his stat building opportunities that he hasn't gotten to play yet. But, like, if he, like, it's, that's not good. It's not good enough. Like, you can't have that. You got to be better at that position. Long story short. So, there's still a lot to be figured out on this offense, I think. Like, they need better quarterback play. It just has to happen. And with the portal, that's always an opportunity to enhance that every year if you have to do it. And so, like, there's a lot to be fixed, I think, on this offense. I think it's clear this scheme, Nick, is a lot – it's based on that wide zone and play action off of it. They can't run it right now because it's not a strength of Chris Rodriguez or this offensive line. I think it's probably twofold there.
Mm-hmm.
He needs probably more reps in it. The offensive line needs more reps. You know, you kind of got to do what you have to do. And so that puts him in a bad situation. And then, you know, I don't think Cohen really wants a quarterback that can really run it a lot outside of scrambles. But he's got one that can. And so, you know, you got to kind of figure out stuff this season. So, like, last week was a Liam Cohen game, and, you know, the Florida game was it, you know, too. And it was kind of the same issues that Eddie Granhoffens has had, like, in big spots where you just need to score a little bit.
Yeah.
Couldn't deliver. You know, you can't go out there and score 10 points.
And it's the first time, you know, to give him a little bit of benefit of the doubt. First time playing some wonky-ass defenses, too. But,
Still, I mean, there's a lot of ball left to be played. But I think there's questions. There's legitimate questions that loom over the team moving forward. Specifically that the court. I mean, we can talk about receiver. Like, it's obvious that receiver is an issue. Everybody knows it's an issue. I feel like I'm the only one talking about Keaton Upshaw, because that's exactly what they need, is a guy in the underneath that if they're going to bracket Wandell going deep, they could hit him across the middle. And that would give them three legitimate receivers if they had him, with Ali, Wandell, and Upshaw. And three's a lot better than two is what they have right now. And they were with one for two games there. So they are missing some guys, but you just got to get – like, Levis has just got to be better. He can't – like, the Mississippi State and Florida games, they just can't happen.
Right. And the thing was that I was so – like, why I think a lot of folks were bullish on Kentucky's chances, because he had been playing better. He was taking gradual steps forward, even against that Georgia.
Put two good games together against LSU, against logo teams. One's really good, the other one's not so good.
Right, right. And he's going to need to play another one this weekend against Tennessee before we move on. Because I want to burn through the defense kind of quickly, because I really – we got to talk about our friend down at Florida.
Yeah.
We got to answer some recruiting questions, and we've got Maction. But defense first. Luckett, would you like to – tell folks why Kentucky didn't play press man, or do we even need to go over that? I think our listeners knew. I think our listeners knew well enough that
as long as Mike Leach is going to be at Mississippi State, this is how Kentucky is going to play them, and it's the right way to play them. But what really jumped out to me, Nick, is like in this matchup, you're just going to have corners. Like last year, if you turn on the tape, Kelvin Joseph, Brandon Echols, and even Dort, they all made plays, competitive plays. Echols got off blocks. He tried to fight the entire Mississippi State team on the sideline.
It was a personal matchup for him, you know?
You know, Kelvin had a big interception. He had a couple other good plays. That outside, those guys have to make plays. Because in this matchup, like, if he's dumping it off to the running back, if they're handing it off, that's what you want.
Yeah.
Because then the stuff down the field is not working, is not open. But you got to get up and you got to come make tackles. Kentucky's defense was actually, I think, pretty good overall. You know, they're in light boxes. Mississippi State only had a 33% rushing success rate as a team. So overall, though, those numbers were good. It was just, you know, the corners got to come up and make plays. And they just didn't. Yeah. The corners were so bad. All three of them had a pass interference call.
Yeah, it was bad.
Will Rogers, he made some throws now in tight window zone coverage that if he's making those throws, you just got to live with them. I tweeted one of them out down the middle between three defenders on like a 18-yard dig. He just put it like that ball could be literally in like a 12-inch window, and he put it in there. So, like, you guys – like, and then he throws a fade. That fade he threw that was incomplete. Like, yeah. He's missed that throw all year when I've seen him outside of the goal line. And he right on the money. So, like, there is some of that. But that's how you have to play Mississippi State. They're going to get yards. You have to – no plays over 30 yards, Nick.
Yeah.
They were under 6 yards per play, which is pretty crazy with how often they move the chains. But you just have – on third down, you got to find a way to get stops. In your corners, like, you got to – those guys have to – I think it's – like, moving forward, that's the most important part of that matchup. You got to get off blocks, got to make tackles on the perimeter, and you got to be able to cover.
Well, especially
they really took advantage of Kentucky's cornerback.
You mentioned the third downs. I should have pulled up this stat when I was thinking about it, but
seven to 12 on third down.
I'm sure that a lot of those two were, so their average distance to go, it was actually 6 yards. I thought it would be bad, but they were four.
They were second and long. They were like, every time they were in second and long, they would gain 18 yards, it felt like. It did make a third and short. And that really, that hurt.
Yeah, and a lot of those were, you know, gains of three or four that turned into 9 and 11-yard gains. Yeah.
I think if Brad White could go back, they probably synced a little bit more on those situations. I think he wouldn't have done that.
But you know, 6 of 6 from
standard down defense.
From 4 yards and in, you know, like they didn't.
That's what I'm saying. You have to figure out a way to, like, they're going to be in third and three.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, that's kind of what you want. You just got to figure out a way to get off the field in those situations. And Kentucky just didn't. You know, it was a bad, you know, it was a bad day on defense. There's, like, we can hammer the offense all we want, but, you know, the defense had, you know, some issues. Like, and situationally, they were beat pretty bad. They, outside of the three and out there at the end of half, I don't think they really played complimentary football. Like, it's 31-17. You know, we have to get a stop now. They let Mississippi State get a couple first downs, let them get some potential field position on a punt. It was a bad punt. That's why it didn't look as bad. But you gotta get stops like that. And if you undercut a route and you get two hands on it, you should probably catch it. You know, it's just you gotta – and they're not forcing any turnovers. Yeah. And that is a huge concern. They're not forcing fumbles. They're not getting their hands on the ball in the air.
Yeah.
Two games in a row, Stetson Bennett and Will Rogers, not the most talented quarterbacks, but they just lit their ass up twice for career days. You know, you got to tip their hat to those players somewhat, but then you have to look at the other side. Like, why is this happening? Like, what's going on here?
Man. Not great. Not great. It was a bad, good for nothing game in Starkville. That place stinks. Like it. Just go ahead and say your
line. They play like that every time they go down there. I mean,
House of Horrors.
I don't like. They're going to have Oklahoma to go down there and sacrifice something.
Get Mississippi State off the damn schedule. I will say, shout out to Kentucky for scoring an offensive touchdown in the third quarter. It took seven quarters for a team to score an offensive touchdown over the last two games since Leach got there. So, man, really, really weird game. But we got to move on, and we're going to move on right after this. Look, I need to ask you a question before we discuss Hendon Hooker and the Tennessee Volunteers. How important is recruiting to your football program?
Pretty in the SEC, it's kind of the lifeblood.
Oh, there we go. Lifeblood. That's all you got to say. It's the lifeblood of our program. But what did Dan Mullen say?
Kind of the opposite.
It's we'll talk about recruiting when it's recruiting time. Isn't football recruiting time like again, every time, every
he's
day?
Trying to be, he's trying to be like Urban Meyer and control the narrative, like bully media in Florida. Like he ends press conferences when he wants to end them. He can make a player's unavailable available when he wants to.
He's not going to talk about recruiting.
But he also doesn't get out like Urban Meyer and recruit like a madman.
Right.
He's a Steve Spurrier, Steve Spurrier, Urban Meyer mixture with the worst qualities of each. And I always this whole year I was like, they'll just get to 8-4, reset, they'll be fine. He'll make some staff changes. Yada, yada, yada. But now it feels like I don't know if this is gonna work.
Well, the problem for me is that, like, he very well could have. I know, like, the record right now is 7-9 against their last the most recent Power 5 opponents. Like, it looks really bad, but the back end of the schedules, it is easy. You should be able to win out.
Yeah.
And all he has to do is just give those canned answers and get the hell out of there. Like, just
weather the storm. PR is terrible. Right.
Just weather the storm. But
this is not acceptable. We're right now. We need to get through the season. We're going to win some games, and then I'm going to reevaluate everything and make some decisions after the season.
It's just so easy. Like you can throw Grantham under the bus. Like I just don't know. Like his one big criticism, the biggest critique, is not being able to recruit the best of the best, the elite of the elite. And I kind of got into it with TJ. He's like, well, they've got top 10 classes. It's like, well, I don't think Dan Mullen's ever signed a five-star recruit, though. And when you're comparing that to Georgia,
it's not like Kirby's
doing it.
Like, 10 is a lot closer to 25 than it is 3.
Yeah, like especially when you're comparing it to Georgia. It's kind of like Louisville's recruiting with Pitino and Cal's recruiting. Like Cal was light years ahead at number one. Louisville still had like 10th ranked classes.
Right.
But it wasn't even close, you know? And it got him to where he was cheating his you know what off to try to make it happen. And it got him in trouble a bit. Like that's what Mullen is. He's stuck in that cocktail party snake eating itself. And Smart is just really, really cranking the pressure up on him. And right now he's being exposed that he can't handle the pressure right now.
Well, unique job, Florida. No fan base in the SEC, maybe outside Alabama, has more requirements. You got to score points. You gotta be fun. You got to recruit well. You got to do this and that. You can't be boring. And no has been spoiled as much as them outside of Alabama with the run they had with Spurrier and Urban. So like that, the bar is super, super high there. Mullen walked in at a good situation because they had Muschamp and McElwain before then. So he had a good 4-year run here, but the recruiting stuff has finally caught up with him. He's been stubborn, hasn't made any chances, and just the media stuff, his PR is bad. It's so bad.
It's so bad.
Like, and part of it just thinks like, damn, Mullen, just go to Nebraska, dude. Just go there. you're going to be able to easier recruit the offensive line you want for your system. You know, go find a, you know, we know you can find quarterbacks.
Get a quarterback named Martinez to be able to run the ball.
Hit the transfer portal for some running backs. Find some defensive coordinator, pay him $1 million. And you can go 8-4 and they will love you there. But, you know, and you can be a snob because you're bringing them back. But it just, that's not going to work at Florida. And it's just, and remember the NFL stuff that leaked out last year after the season? And
oh, and all of the jockeying he did to try to get an extension. It was.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, there's some warning signs down there. But Florida has that effect on, I mean, McElwain, like, went nuts. He was humping a shark, saying, you know, his family was getting death threats. He was like on Feinbaum saying, you know, people are threatening my family, like trying to kill us. And Paul was like, huh? Did all that, did like that whole stand at Media Days, you know, and everybody asked him about it. And he was like very defensive about it, the shark. And then he gets fired in the middle of the year. And so, then Muschamp was a golden boy at that time. And just totally flamed out at Florida. Maybe that's just something with that job.
Mike Bianchi, man, he just gets to them all, you know?
Yeah. Well, now Florida's like, obviously they have a lot going for them, but you never want to be in a situation where you're burning and turning through three coaches in a row in 11, 12 years or whatever it is. Like that the stability there, you know, that starts catching up with you.
Would love to see it.
Yeah. But we'd love to see it. I just, it's been crazy.
It's also funny.
It's more evidence to the, if Kentucky beats you, if you're in the SEC and you let Kentucky beat you, that can just, it can just spiral your coaching career. Pruitt last season, Spurrier, we've seen Spurrier.
Yeah.
Barry Odom got beat repetitively by Kentucky. Derek Mason repetitively by Kentucky. Mullen loses, you know, 2 out of 4 to Kentucky. Like, whenever, if he did get fired this year, they would talk a lot about the recruiting, but one quiet point would be up, well, he didn't beat Kentucky, and you got to beat Kentucky if you're at Florida. So Mark Stoops, it's just like the Kingslayer over here.
Oh, love
Jamie
it.
Jamie Lannister just knocking out everywhere.
Instead of his arm, he lost his hair. oh, man. The thing I love, too, is now everybody is everybody's getting asked the recruiting questions. Jimmy Lake got asked at the – which if you'd never heard the name Jimmy Lake, he's Washington's head coach now. He got asked about it, the recruiting rivalry of sorts with Oregon. He said something along the lines of, we recruit against schools with more academic prowess than – schools like Oregon. So yeah. I wouldn't even consider them competition. So Oregon's president releases a statement. UW is a wonderful school with a great football history. I have great respect and affection for its president, its academic and football program, and its former exceptional football coach, Coach Peterson.
Yeah, like Oregon and Washington is quite like, that's a pretty intense rivalry.
Oh, man.
But like Jimmy Lake is another, he's just wants to be X and O's. He's not really getting deep in the trenches, I would say, recruiting wise, like he should. And Oregon is with Mario Cristobal. Like they're going, it's an SEC recruiting strategy he's using up there, which is why he's going to, if Mullen left, he's going to probably be the top target for Florida.
And he kind of was,
Lake was trying to take a shot, like a rivalry shot at Oregon, saying, you know, we're a better academic school or whatever. But people don't want to hear. They don't care. Like no one cares. Like,
nobody cares.
Literally, people going. They don't care. They want to beat Oregon. So get better players.
Man, so funny. Speaking of funny, guess what we've got tonight, Adam Luckett?
Best time of year, man.
Return of the Mac. Yes, it is. Return of the Mac. Oh God! And folks, the best thing to do for your Mac-tion is to roll out some prize picks and play. And that's exactly what we're doing tonight. Luckett, you've got a pick. I've got a pick. We're going to win some freaking money watching Mac football on Tuesday night by playing prize picks. It's easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Download the wonderful app, Prize Picks app, or visit prizepicks.com. Sign up using the code PERSONNEL and you'll get an instant 100% bonus on up to $100 on your first deposit. And let's tell them who the winner is going to be. I am sticking with the former Wildcat, Toledo running back Bryant Kobach, over 88 and a half yards for the Rockets rushing. Lock it in. Lock it. Who's your pick?
Staying in that same game, Eastern Michigan versus Toledo tonight is the big game. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with Ben Bryant, former Cincinnati quarterback, over 232 passing yards.
Oh, man.
Toledo, Eastern Michigan, significant. The game there, they're in the MAC. Should be a pretty fun one.
The Emus are 9-point underdogs at home. Huh?
I thought it was at Toledo. Is it not? Is it Eastern Michigan?
I don't know. You said at the Glass Bowl. Oh, the factory. Yeah, I get yeah. Glass Bowl.
Get your MAC. Get your MAC stadiums right.
How did I get them wrong, man? I apologize to all of our listeners out there. I apologize to Prize Picks. Your product is excellent. Use the promo code Personnel. Download. Get on the action tonight because I've got to get my stadiums better because we're going to be watching WKU in action here in the near future, right?
Yeah, the Toledo WKU rivalry is one I've been jonesing for my whole college football existence.
Bowling Green State going to Bowling Green.
Regionally, Middle Tennessee and WKU, it's not like, especially for WKU, it's not too super far to these places. They're going to be playing on Tuesday night, and WKU fits in because the crowd attendance is not great there.
Nope.
So playing some games on Tuesday or Wednesday won't be that big of a deal.
Neither is Middle Tennessee State. That's a weird-ass stadium.
Yeah, no one ever shows up. You would think no one went to school there.
Yeah, but it's like the biggest school in the state.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. But I think all in all, things were looking pretty dire. This lifeboat that they've extended out to Western and Middle Tennessee help because Sun Belt, both schools were previously in the Sun Belt. The rivals were like, all right, we're getting the hell out of here. We're going to Conference USA. And almost as soon as they did, the Sun Belt stock rose, Conference USA was falling, mm-hmm. and the Sun Belt wasn't going to take them back. So,
yeah. Well, the Sun Belt actually went out and like brought in good football teams instead of CUSA was just looking for markets.
Right, right. And that
imagine which one ended up lasting.
Exactly. So the Conference USA, it's essentially falling apart, but Western Kentucky's going to the MAC. We've got MAC football tonight. We've got it tomorrow night. A month of football in November where you just got it on your TV at all times. Play with Prize Picks whenever you do. It's going to be great. You should play with it this weekend too. It's available in a ton of states. You can play it whenever the Wildcats are hosting the Tennessee Volunteers and Luckett. Things seem bad right now, but things can get good in a hurry if you take down your rival. That's what's the word I'm looking for? Feisty, maybe?
Plucky.
Plucky, yeah. They're a plucky rival right now because they can score some points and they have a good quarterback, and that's always dangerous against a team that can score on some big plays. They're definitely one of those teams on Saturdays that whenever you check the scoreboard when Tennessee's playing football, you never know what it's going to be. They could be beating Missouri by 50 points. They could be losing to Alabama by 40 points, or they could be a close ball game for a quarter or two. You don't know what you're going to get out of this offense out of Josh Heupel. The last time Mark Stoops faced Josh Heupel, it was the most dominant defensive performance in the history of Kentucky football. I do not care how old you are out there. To see that team shut down that Missouri offense and go 3-and-out for 9 straight possessions was unlike anything I've ever watched. Kentucky doesn't.
That was actually Derek Dooley, I think.
Was it?
Pretty sure.
Drew Locke.
Yeah, but
was it?
Dooley got him in his last season, and like that's the reason Locke stayed is because they brought an NFL guy in.
Damn it.
Yeah, you missed it by 1 year.
Oh, God.
He was UCF's head coach. They ran the table 12-0 and then lost to LSU in the Fiesta Bowl 2018.
I thought that was the year.
But Kentucky beat him in 2016 and 2017.
Yes, both wins. Stoops has beaten Heupel a few times around. I love Stoops trying to think about when he coached with Heupel too, which I'm sure it's easy to forget because Heupel does not look like the same person that used to coach with Mark Stoops.
Yeah. My man's packed on some LBs. I ain't mad at him.
It's gain season, you know?
I ain't mad at him. Just ball coach.
Look, the cornerbacks were challenged quite a bit in Mississippi State. That's going to happen again this week. Can you just describe how it's different and why Kentucky fans should and shouldn't be worried.
Yeah, I'm very interested to see how Brad White matches up with them. I'm going to try to go back and watch that 2016-2017 game when Kentucky played them, just see how they kind of matched up with them. Because, like, big splits by the offensive line. A lot of times their receivers are in stack, and they're pretty much, like, as far as you can get without being out of bounds on the sideline. So just create a lot of space, and then they try to – with that all that space, they try to sneak and run the ball on you. And then the added element with Hendon Hooker is giving them QB run, which is something Heupel's never really – this is the first time we're really seeing a heavy dose of QB run with his offense, and Hooker's just been awesome for them. He's probably the third best quarterback in the SEC this season behind Corral and Bryce Young. Since he's taken over, Tennessee's plus +8 in the turnover margin. In all six starts, they haven't lost a turnover battle yet. They're scoring 37 points a game. And to me, the matchup is all about the running game. Like, you can run the ball on this Tennessee defense. Giving up over 200 yards, I think, three times to teams. Even South Carolina had a good amount of success running the football. And QB run is something they've really struggled with. Matt Corral had a huge day, over 200 yards on the ground. Emory Jones had a huge day on the ground. And so that's really what it comes down to. Like, when Tennessee, when their run game gets stopped, that's when they can have issues on offense, because they don't want to throw the ball more than 25 to 28 times. Like, this is not, let's go out here and pass it 45 times spread. This is a run first spread, and then they want to sneak a guy behind you and try to hit a deep shot off the tempo. And really the communication issues, three touchdowns, two against Alabama, one against Florida, they got just because there was a bad communication issue there, and a guy busted wide open down the field and Hooker hit him, and Milton wasn't hitting the shots early in the season. So really the game to me, can you force Tennessee to throw it more than 30 times? If you do, I think Kentucky wins. If they don't, it's probably a Kentucky loss. And then offensively, you got to be able to run the ball. I think Will Levis, you got to be willing for him to run it. But this is defense is not – Kentucky matches up a lot better with this defense than they have the last two. So I think they're going to have more success on offense because of that. It'd be a good game for get Rodriguez healthy and ride him for 25 carries, and then sprinkle in about 10 to 12 rushes from Levis, and then just hit on a few pass plays. But the game for me a lot is just the running game. And in turnovers, like, you look at the numbers, Kentucky's minus -12 this year, last in the country. Tennessee's plus +8 with Hooker in the lineup. Just try to play that even. Get that even, win the running battle, and I think you should win the game. But they put you in some dilemmas on defense. And so can you stop the ball with a lighter box? Can you stay in your cover three looks, or do you have to get out and play more, you know, cover one, man up more? You know, I'm interested to see how Kentucky kind of lines up and plays them Saturday. A lot of cramps are going to be happening.
Oh, Kroger love Field. The cramps.
35-degree cramps. Tennessee, people are floating out this cold weather storyline.
Love it.
Like, there's the Hendon Hooker stuff, which they wrote about today, Tuesday.
Love
it. But it's going to be like 35 to 38 degrees with minimal wind. In that, like, you have, like, if you wear your cold weather gear plus a blanket, no one's getting really cold in there.
No.
Like, it's not like that's not wind is what gets you. So, like, they're floating the storyline. Like, I don't know if this offense is going to work. Like, it's almost like a built in excuse. Like, it's not like going to be anything crazy.
Oh, so you're heading off their excuses at the pass. I see what you're doing.
I'm not good call. That.
I will say the video.
Like, I don't want to. If Kentucky goes out and wins by 14, I don't want to hear anything about the weather.
Okay. Now, what if I told you that the weather could let us get some Joe Milton at Kroger Field? That, I want to see Joe Milton try to hit Nicholasville Road. All right. I want to see Joe Milton in person so badly, because who knows what the hell that wild card
can he break is. A window at Greg Page apartment,
dude. He is like Danny Clark to the 11,000th degree. I mean, it is incredible. Like, I
mean, he's Happy Gilmore on a football field.
It's incredible. It's That's the best way to put it. I mean, if Jameis Winston could not corral any of his talent at all, he's like Jameis Winston before he had what's his name, Chubb show him how to putt or whatever it may
be. Yeah, I'm getting like, I cannot wait to get in the box and watch him warm up just to see, because I am mesmerized when I watch him throw the ball because it looks beautiful. Like, I could see why anybody would buy into that and like, well, let me try to mold him.
Oh yeah. Like, I can be the one that tames it. He's that wild bucking Bronco that that Cowboys like, there's old Messy. We've been trying to get her for years, but nobody could ever tame.
I mean, because like you need to read it, the Knicks post, but like pretty much Hendon Hooker gets spasms when it gets cold.
I mean, he's shaking on the sideline. Like,
his dad had like the same thing, he said. And like, the Clemson game it was a lot colder, I think, because the wind was blowing that night, December
empty
in Blacksburg.
Stadium in the mountains, you know.
Yeah. So I mean, he was literally shivering uncontrollably on the sideline.
Couldn't handle a snap. I mean, it was bad. Now I don't think like, I'm not relying on that to be the case. But it is. Like, I think it's music to your ears, though. We got some football weather. This is made for
like
that bruising physical style of football. And if Mark Stoops' early week comments are any indication, like, Kentucky's going to run the damn ball against Tennessee. He's sick of this.
Yeah, it's a run for it's a run for 220 plus game. Mississippi State was not that. This is, you know, this is man up and let's play, you know, man ball. This is that kind of game for, you know, it's a Kentucky's offensive line, two not great performances in a row. They should be pretty motivated. We've seen them in the past. This is kind of when they really play their best after a couple crap games. You know, Rodriguez, I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I think he's playing through some type of injury. But I think at this point, you kind of just got to hopefully whatever happens, he's gets healed up a bit. You just have to ride him.
Yeah.
And like, please – QB run it, man. And I also think, like, if you do that, like, just let – I think it might help Levis just kind of settle in.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And it also gives the
– You know, he's going to be fine in the cold weather.
It's a great kind of card to the, like, how you get your team fired up kind of card. You generate some almost, like, artificial momentum with like a big Will Levis run, you know, like the Kroger Field feeds off of it. You get a blue white chant going. You know, it's going to be good for them to be back home. You haven't had a home game in almost a month. So I'm excited because like as downtrodden as we feel right now, you see that orange color and you remember how much you hate those good for nothing, you know, what's from Tennessee. You get your blood boiling a little bit. You watch Kentucky kick their teeth in. You get fired up, and that like you can still really put an exclamation point at the end of the season.
Yeah. Like, it's a good matchup. Like, I think any team could win this game, obviously. Both teams do about the same stuff well for the most part. Big feather in Kentucky's cap is they do limit explosive plays, and Tennessee kind of lives off that. If, you know, I think they could struggle if they have to go on long, methodical drives against this Kentucky defense, because this offensive line they have is not very good, in my opinion. Cade Mays is their best player, and he's pretty banged up. He missed the last two games, I think. I think he was taken out of the Ole Miss game, and I don't think he played against Alabama. So I'm not sure what his status is. Heupel is worse than Stoops, Nick, when it comes to giving injury information.
And that's why.
So you don't Heupel won't even give you a we'll see.
Yeah, which surprisingly, as tight-lipped as Kirby is about his media stuff, he is candid about injuries, I've learned.
Yeah, right? He does the old Rich Brooks, I think, where he just starts his press conference with it and gets it out of the way.
But I just looked up the long scrimmage play stats. Tennessee, second in the SEC, 21 plays of 30-plus yards. Mm-hmm. Kentucky, second in the SEC, 7 plays of 30-plus yards.
Defense? So,
yeah, defense.
And that's
top.
That's top 10. That's like top 10 nationally.
Right. You say second, it's behind Georgia. You know?
Yeah.
But Kentucky's defense is very good about keeping everything underneath. You just can't have, like, one of those busted coverage touchdowns is going to be one too many against this Tennessee team. And you almost
you have to make, you have to, like we talked about Kentucky stylistically, like Mississippi State was fine because they're a ball control offense, Mississippi State. Tennessee is not. It's all gas, no brakes tempo. They want to score fast, get explosive plays, and that's all they're really worried about. You got to make them play your game. So you need to get to where you're dominating, you know, time of possession and total plays, where you're moving the chains. You're getting more first downs. You're eating up clock. You're leaning on them, on their defense, getting them in a hole. You're keeping that offense and them on the sideline. Especially, you know, that's where cold weather can kind of have advantage. Like if that offense is used to go, fast, and they're over there staying on the sideline for a long time, that can help you. And, man, you're kind of due to win the turnover margin. Like they're due to get, you know, three takeaways just by dumb luck at this point. Man. Like they're due for a fumble to bounce their way,
or a tip pass to go right into somebody's arms, you know,
right?
Like, or a Joe Milton just throwing it right to you, you know. Man, really want some Joe Milton in my life.
Mm-hmm. And they've seen Milton before, which can't hurt, I don't think, for the coaches. They've got some tape on him, especially, you know, kind of against their kind of scheme, even though he's in a totally different scheme now. So that can't hurt, but we'll see. I mean, Kentucky, though, they're backed into a corner, man. Two games in a row you've lost. They're a wounded animal right now. While Tennessee, like, they're 4-4 off two losses, but they're kind of getting patted on the back a lot down there. You know, they had a week off. Now they're kind of – now that you see it, like, Kentucky got beat. Like, it's kind of, you know, around them it's going to be like, we're going to win this game, beat Kentucky. I think they could really – like, I think the opportunity is there to really for Kentucky to come out pretty fired up and mad and get a lead early, and then you get Tennessee playing in your type of game where it's in between, you know, just kind of a boxing match. You got them on the ropes, and you're just kind of slowly jabbing them. That's really, I think, Kentucky's recipe in this game. Get Tennessee in their game, run the football, and then force them against your big play defense to throw the ball over 30 times. And then hopefully if Hooker has to do that, we haven't seen him do it all year.
No.
Because they've been able to stay in that 24 to 28 kind of window. If he's able to do that, do you see them take more risk? And do you see him – he's done a great job protecting the football, but if he gets in that situation, you could see him force more things, and that's when you could get a turnover, game-changing type stuff. I think that's kind of the game for Kentucky. You got to make them – it's a stylistic kind of – whoever – determines the tenor of the game probably is going to have the major advantage.
Well, hopefully Hendon Hooker's last game against Kentucky is a lot like this next one.
Yeah.
Except more of a blowout.
He didn't have a great passing game, but Virginia Tech's running game, which was kind of their weakness, kind of killed Kentucky that game, which was a surprise.
Yeah, that was annoying. But, hey, Lynn Bowden said
– but I will say wrong. Tennessee running back Tyon Evans is probably the biggest key to this game. He's been awesome this season, but he's having a hard time staying healthy. And then their second running back, Jabari Small, is dealing with he's playing through a big shoulder injury. So he has been pretty ineffective the last few games. If you can slow down Evans, Tyon Evans, I think he's number eight. Yeah, number eight. Kentucky's going to have a really good chance to have a big day, because if they're slowing that down, they're able to play coverage in the back end. They're not going to give up big plays. They're not going to play. They're not going to man up them like Alabama and Florida did to create big plays. So then Kentucky was really going to have a good opportunity. So slow down Tyon. It's really the running game. Just whoever establishes that, I think, is going to have a great, great advantage in this game.
Man, should be a good one at a chilly Kroger Field Saturday night. Chilly weather, football weather. Lucky, are you going to be wearing the wide receiver gloves?
I might be bringing those out. when Harbaugh came out, man, I ain't going to lie, I got a little fired up when he was putting on the receiver gloves, walking out on the field. I was like, this is the best. This is it.
Football weather's here. Well, we hope you've enjoyed the 11 personnel. We hope you enjoy this football weather and a little prize pick, some action tonight. It's been a joy. Enjoy the Cats getting back on track against the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll see you next week right here on 11 personnel.